from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me today on Impact Catalyst is the Executive Director of the St. Pete Museum of History, Rui Farias. Welcome, sir.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Glad to be here.
It's good to see you again. Just over visiting a couple of days ago. It's always fun. Always discover something new every time I walk in there. It's a cool place.
That's what our goal is.
So let's do a quick 101. I think the biggest problem is you just got such a terrible location. How do you overcome such a terrible location and, you know, tucked away nowhere where anybody can find you?
Well, I'm struggling to look at the camera here because if I pick my eyes up, I see the Vinoy out my window. So that's, yeah, it's a bit of a struggle every day. Actually, I had to turn my desk around so I don't look at the Vinoy every day. But yeah, so we're situated right at the foot of the pier on the new St. Pete Pier. And it's been a blessing and a curse, of course, because, man, you can't ask for a better venue. And we've been here, last week was 101 years. We've been on the same site. So we've been here for over 100 years. But holy cow, it gets so crazy busy and packed out here that sometimes you can't find a parking spot, which is something that we never thought we would say in this city, but that's where we are.
Victims of our own success. So can you give us the one-on-one on the mission? I mean, obviously there's some self-evident mission in recording St. Pete's history, but you know, what's special about it to you that might not be as self-evident?
Well, I think people don't realize the unique history that we've had in this area. And everybody knows about the aviation history with the flight of the Benoit in 1914 that, you know, is the birth of commercial air flight. But there's so much other history here and unique history. And mostly because it's, you know, people who came here from up north for the last 100 years or from the Midwest who... especially in the early days, in the early 1900s, you know, they came down here with a little bit of money, looking to make a lot of money, like everybody did in Florida. But it seems like everywhere we turn, we find some cool new history that we didn't know about here in the city.
Yeah, and you've got a great collection. With so much, we do have limited space, and there's so much out there. How do you, what's your sort of process for deciding what makes it out? What doesn't, and you have large displays to contend with as well.
Right. And I mean, the museum has a specific mission. Our mission pretty much in short is to, collect, preserve, and present the history of St. Petersburg and Pinellas County. We've expanded that a little bit to include a lot more Florida. When you look at our history, it kind of mirrors some of the other cities, that grew up in the 1920s. So you can't really tell our history without telling the history of other parts of Florida. So we've expanded our mission to include that. So we specifically look for artifacts, photographs, maps, diagrams, personal letters that reflects that. But you'd be amazed. So I've read, stories and documents of past executive directors, especially in the 60s and 70s, where they would come in the morning and unlock the door, and on the doorstep would be boxes full of stuff. And you can imagine, because St. Petersburg, for the longest time was the town that people came to retire. So they brought all their stuff with them. And eventually those people would pass and their family would look at us and go, hey, you're the history museum. Here's all this old stuff, right, that my grandfather had. So we've narrowed down our collections policy a little bit because we literally had a warehouse filled with things that I would just shake my head and wonder, why did they take this? And there are specific rules that you have to follow. The state has guidelines that you have to follow to deassess and dispose of items. So, of course, we do that if it doesn't match our mission. But we're a little bit more selected now. But the thing that that people don't realize, and every time someone calls me and says, hey, we're having a garage sale or estate sale, because my family was here for 50 years and they passed away and we're going to throw out a bunch of stuff and come look at what they think is the good stuff. And I'm just like, stop. I'm like, do not throw anything away until we have a chance to have a look at it. Because it's usually the stuff that people think that we don't want, like personal correspondence and things like that, is what we really want. We hold, we're the keeper of the city's archives. And in a vault we have upstairs, I mean, everybody from, you know, one of our founders, John Williams, to current day families who, you know, have been in business here forever, we have a lot of their personal documents. And that's how we truly know and understand and can share the history of our city. So this is the history geek in me geeking out here about these type of things, but those are the calls that we love when we know that we're going to find something new that may change the St. Pete history books. You never know.
Yeah. And what fun. It's like a treasure hunt constantly.
Absolutely.
And you know, museums have also special exhibits as well, in addition to the normal collection, and you are rotating them out from time to time. You have a pretty important one coming up around civil rights history in the area. Can you tell us a little bit about what's forthcoming?
We do. We have the major part of the exhibit is on loan from the Museum of Florida History in Tallahassee. It's called Civil Rights in the Sunshine State. And it is an amazing exhibit of photographs and informational panels and documents that take you on a chronological journey from probably the late 1800s to the 1970s of the civil rights struggle in Florida. And people don't realize how important that is. They you know, when you study about the civil rights in school, you hear about Selma and Montgomery, and you know, and so you're always hearing about Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia, and people don't realize the battles that happened here in the state of Florida. So that exhibit covers a lot of civil rights activities throughout the state of Florida, but we added a part to it. So we wanted to bring it a little bit closer to home. So using photographs, using some artifacts, and some good stories that we've collected, we've also added an area of St. Pete's civil rights events and the struggles that the movement had here, you know, as early as the 1920s and 30s, you know, into the 1970s. So that exhibit opens Saturday, February 25th. It fills our main gallery. We're going to have some programming around it. We're going to have some speakers come in during the course of the exhibit. When you actually walk into this, I mean, and this has been one of the most rewarding parts of creating this exhibit. Not only, you know, have we worked with the Florida Museum of History from Tallahassee, but we've also collaborated with the St. Pete African American Heritage Trail. So when you walk down the steps or the ramp into our main gallery, you're literally walking through the Heritage Trail. So you get to experience that. And we've also collaborated with the Woodson Museum on programming later on. But this exhibit, it will be up until June 8th. So we plan on a lot of activity between February 25th and June 8th in a number of venues around town.
That's amazing. That sounds fantastic. And, you know, other than exhibits, technology is, you know, its attention spans are scattered, and, you know, the mission of, you know, a lot of brick and mortar places is getting harder to fulfill over time. You know, how are you using the future to help better tell the stories of the past, or how do you plan to use
technology? And that's key, I think, because I think that, you know, when you look traditionally at history museums, they tend to lag behind a little bit in the world of technology. So we've been looking at how we can incorporate, whether it's virtual reality, any of the things that are out there now that are actually becoming affordable. I mean, we're not the Smithsonian, right? So we don't have that kind of budget. So the technology is becoming more and more affordable. So we're looking at those things. Like, we met with the folks at the Innovation District and how we can incorporate some of that technology into our existing exhibits and how we can build going forward. Hanging from the ceiling in our Flight 1 gallery is a working replica of the Benoit airboat. And, you know, every day I walk by that, I'm like, well, how cool would it be if we could do something with virtual reality that you actually, you know, put a headset on and you're actually flying on a plane, you know, from St. Pete to Tampa on that first flight. So it's possible. It's a lot easier than I thought it was. So we're talking to some people now to work on that. So the world of technology for us is just opening. mean, there seems to be an endless amount of opportunity out there for us to use.
Yeah, and you mentioned not being the Smithsonian. Can you talk a little bit about your budget and, you know, or how much anybody listening to this that wants to support what you're doing? I'm assuming you're open to that. Or did they do that?
People, because we're the St. Pete Museum of History, people think that, you know, we're funded by the city. We are not. You know, the St. Petersburg Historical Society is its own 501c3 nonprofit. You know, we have an amazing lease with the city on this amazing piece of property, and the city has been really good to us as far as, you know, arts grants and things like that when we've needed help. But our operations day to day is, you know, currently not funded by the city. So we rely on admissions, special events, grants, corporate donations. Like, for instance, the residences at 400 Central, right, with the Red Apple Group. They've funded the Civil Rights exhibit. And so without their assistance, we wouldn't have been able to pull this off. So, you know, we need a huge shout out and thanks to them for doing this. And there's been a lot of that type of support in the community. Of course, we need more, but being the city's history museum, especially for people who have been here a long time, it's almost kind of like a legacy thing, you know, because everybody wants to share our history, right? And we want to be able to show, you know, where we've been and how far we've grown, and, you know, and so, like I said, some of the amazing events, you know, that happened here in the city. So the corporate world has, you know, stepped up when we needed it. But we basically survive primarily on donations and grants.
And that can be a stressful existence. I mean, anybody who's run a business or started a business knows that, you know, when you don't have a ton of runway and you know, you don't know a lot of factors outside your control for funding and stuff, that's so, you know, kudos to you for fighting that good fight and keeping the thing going and everything, because it is so important. So I guess I want to finish up anecdotally. Tell us some fun, weird historical fact that will delight us that we may not know already. If you've got one.
Okay.
Got one ready.
So we started doing tours. We've started doing historic walking tours of downtown, and we're going to expand those. And we started doing historic trolley tours mostly around the downtown area. It's about a 2-hour trolley tour. So we dove in and started doing a lot of research, you know, for that, because, you know, you want to entertain the people for 2 hours when they're on the trolley. And man, we're finding out some, again, by basically combing through all those documents that we have, right? That personal correspondence. We found out some pretty amazing stuff. Like in the 1920s, when you look at our city, and as it has, when it grows during that time period, the 1920s, and you look at the plot maps and you look at the names on who owns that property, how many cities can say the majority of their property are owned by women? And you see female names throughout the property. We found out about Sarah Williams Armistead, who came to St. Petersburg with John Williams, who was married to at the time. Well, through all this correspondence and, you know, some research, we found out that, well, John wasn't her first husband. And when he passes, Sarah becomes a pretty large landowner in St. Petersburg and then marries, you know, Captain Armistead. And then he passes and becomes even more wealthy with more land. So we're looking a little deeper into Sarah, because she's an interesting character. And we have a lot of those. I mean, we have, you know, like even Charles Roser, who created Roser Park. He's always been associated with, you know, the Fig Newton cookie, that he invented a Fig Newton cookie. Well, he didn't really, but he did perfect it. And that's how he made his money from Nabisco. So there's a lot of those cool little unique stories, throughout the city, like, you know, the whole, and I guess what, you know, in a lot of our tours, especially, the walking tour, we kind of debunk the myth about how our name came to be. You know, I grew up in St. Petersburg, and everybody growing up in St. Pete, you know, it was learn the story that John Williams and Peter DeMenn stood in the middle of Central, is now Central Avenue, and flipped the coin, and the winner names the city, the loser names the first hotel. Well, that's not necessarily true how it happened, which is unfortunate because it's a much better story than the real story. So sometimes we just go with the myth because it's a lot more fun.
So what is the true story?
Like I said, it's nowhere near as fun. We were actually going to be Williamsville. So imagine living in Williamsville, Florida, or possibly Williamsburg. And then when, you know, some of the folks that were here at the time kind of were a little up in arms about that, he even threw out Detroit, that we would be Detroit, Florida, because that was his hometown. Peter DeMenz, of course, was from Russia. And although he wasn't born in St. Petersburg, he had lived in St. Petersburg, Russia for a while. And he had a press conference announcing that he was expanding the Orange Belt Railway to the end of the Pinellas Peninsula, because we didn't really have a name, and announced that his train would end in St. Petersburg, Florida. And that caused a little bit of, you know, the little angst between John and, you know, and Peter. But basically, the partners involved in the deal pretty much threw their hands up and were like, just let Peter name the city. And the folks at St. Pete, you know, St. Petersburg, Florida, or St. Petersburg, rather, was, you know, was an exotic European name. And it was a lot more fun than Williamsville. No offense to anybody by the name of Williams.
Yeah, it just goes to show how, you know, all these things that are iconic, institutional sort of pieces of what we grew up with and have these names that it's just, you know, a bunch of people running around, you know, picking names and fighting about it or not fighting about it. You know, maybe more interesting was happening. So they said, let him name it what he wants, and went and, you know, maybe it was a, you know, full moon or something. Who knows?
But that's right.
Interesting. Well, they're all stories worth knowing. And I think we should, you know, my dream still is, and I mentioned this to you, I got to give a shout out to the other sort of one-man history machine in town, Mr. Steiniger, Chris Steiniger, the president, CEO of the chamber, who you both are big collectors of St. Pete's history. But one of these days, I'm going to get you guys out there, American Picker style, going to these estate sales, filming you, talking about the stuff you find and stuff. I think that'd be some quality programming that I know.
Well, we're on. We definitely have to do that. Yeah, Chris and I actually talked about doing some sort of thing like that, American Picker style, but that would be a blast. So you send the invite, we'll be there.
All right, I'm going to work on it. I appreciate it. All right, Reid, well, thanks so much. It's always good to catch up with you. And again, just such important work to, you know, I think it's you know, right in the belly of all the progress of St. Pete is this, you know, beacon of our history. And the importance of that can't be overstated. So thanks for doing that. And we'll continue to support you however we can going forward.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the time, Joe.
From stpetecatalyst.com.